this week's edition of the Video News Endscreen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from Endscreen Media joins me as always. Hi, Colin. How are you?
I'm doing well, and you the same, Will?
Yeah, doing great. You know, summer carries on here. It's New England. We get a small window of time to actually get outside and enjoy the weather, so we're in it, and it's always a pleasure, although today is actually cool and cloudy. We're recording on Thursday. But no complaints. How about you?
Yeah, me too. I tell you, I'm spending a lot of time watching stuff on my connected TV. And I can tell you that apparently I am not alone, because there's been a bunch of data this week that shows just how quickly people are adopting the connected TV. So that's our subject for this week, right?
Yeah, totally. We want to do as we periodically do, which is step back and talk about some of the interesting research that's crossed our desks as a way of helping listeners understand a little more about some of the key changes that are happening in the industry that we're keeping track of and that, you know, we think are particularly interesting. So we've got some research from Nielsen we're going to talk about today, some research from Parks we're going to talk about, and finally some new data from Roku that they announced how well they're doing that we want to touch on. So you're going to get us started with some of the Nielsen data.
I will. And yeah, Nielsen released their new total audience report for Q1 2017. And I track this data pretty closely, Will. So I've got this big spreadsheet and I've got all the data in there. So I always jump on this stuff pretty quickly. And I was really interested to look at how connected television is doing. Now, Nielsen doesn't track that exactly in the total audience report. What they do track is multimedia devices, which is what they call streaming media players. That's, you know, Roku, Apple TV, that type of thing. And so I looked at the first quarter for the last 4 years, so that's 2014 through 2017, and really the growth in in these multimedia device usage is pretty impressive. Back in Q1 2014, we were watching about 0.4 hours per week, and that has grown really strongly to we're now watching about 2.3 hours per week. Now, the way Nielsen does this calculation is they average the usage over the total population. So that includes people who actually don't have smart TVs. They're allocated a portion here. And so that this probably sounds pretty low, but I'll get to some interesting data that looks just at smart TV users in just a second. But the interesting thing is that the biggest users of connected TVs was the 25 to 34-year-olds. That's, I guess, what you would call the older millennial group. And they're watching 3 hours and 35 minutes per week. And the second biggest user, and this actually was a bit of a surprise, is the 2 to 11-year-olds, 2 hours and 55 minutes a week. And I was writing about the battle that's happening online for kids' viewership last week, and this really follows that pretty closely. What it's showing is that parents are choosing to pick, I think, what they consider to be fairly safe services online that allow their kids to just watch as much as they like, and a lot of that's taking place on the smart television. But I want to talk about the specifically connected TV users, and so I dropped in on Nielsen's other report that is pretty good, called their Comparable Metrics Report, and I looked at Q4 2016, and wow, the numbers are pretty impressive. The average adult connected TV user is watching 8 hours and 45 minutes per week. So that's 1 hour and 50 minutes per day. So, you know, what this is showing is those people that have gone to the trouble of connecting their television, they're really using it now. They're watching a lot of online video on a daily basis on that particular mechanism. That's not to say that they're not still watching TV. They are still watching TV, but it's making a big impact. And I probably should just note a couple of other numbers that sort of stood out to me live TV and just TV viewing does continue to decline. Live TV viewing was down 4.5% from the same quarter last year. And total TV viewing, which includes DVR watching, was down 4%. So a lot of that time looks like it's transferring directly over to the connected television from the television. So pretty interesting data there from Nielsen.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, you at one point there in your comment, you said people who have gone to the trouble of connecting their TV. And I just wanted to chime in on that, that I think the reality is that it's not very much trouble to connect your TV to the internet now with these devices like Roku and Apple TV and Chromecast, et cetera. And it's because it's not much trouble and because it's very inexpensive that's sort of driving this huge adoption that we're seeing of connected TVs, right?
You got that right. I picked up in the last couple of months, I've gotten two devices that have Android TV with it, and one of them is the Air TV player from Sling, and the other one was an actual new smart TV that includes Android TV, and Will, it was trivial. Basically, it directs you to go grab your smartphone, and it picks up all the settings from the smartphone, so you don't even have to enter SSID, password, any of that. It just picks it all up from the smartphone and away you go. So you're dead right. It is absolutely trivial.
No kidding. Explain that just a little bit more, Colin. You're saying that you fire up a new smart TV that has Android TV in it, and it doesn't even ask you for your settings. It automatically, I mean, how does it know who you are?
It doesn't know. It says, do you have an Android smartphone? And if the answer is yes, they tell you to go get it and turn the Wi-Fi on. And the phone connects to the television. And the television picks up all the settings from the phone.
Without you having to enter any credentials at all?
Nothing.
And does that carry through for like your logins for Netflix and Hulu and stuff like that, or just for being able to like gain top level access to the internet?
It includes some of them, but not all of them. And to be honest, I can't remember which ones it includes specifically right now. But it's very, very, very easy to do and requires basically no thought whatsoever.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, it's so clear that the experience of using a connected TV is getting easier and easier. All the friction is being removed. And Colin, I think that sort of leads in a way to what we were talking about, wanting to get into some of the parks data. And there were a few data points that they released this week that really do speak, I think, to what we're talking about, how easy connected TVs are to access and take advantage of. So the first point they raised was that now the majority, more than 50% of U.S. broadband households are watching internet video on their TVs. That's really no surprise when you think about it. In fact, I'm not a little bit surprised that it's not even higher than that at this point. But anyway, Park says that it's a little over 50% of broadband U.S. broadband households now watching video on a TV. We know from separate research, I think from Leishman Research Group, that over 70% of U.S. homes have at least one TV connected to the internet. Just because they have it connected obviously doesn't mean that they're actually using it to watch video. Parks is coming in saying that over 50% are actually using it. They went one step further to then kind of talk about SVOD services and subscriptions to specific SVOD services. So I thought a few relevant data points. 72% of non-pay TV subscribers subscribe to an OTT video service, which was their primary source for content. 49% of broadband households in the U.S. subscribe to Netflix, which is by far the SVOD service that's most subscribed to. Overall, Park said that almost 60% of U.S. broadband households now subscribe to either Netflix, Amazon, or Hulu. So 59% was the specific number there. Again, Netflix by far the most popular of those three services. They actually also went further to kind of talk about the niche services, the services outside of those big three. And just to kind of underscore how those big three really do dominate the market, Parks found that only 6% of U.S. broadband households subscribe to an OTT service other than the big three without first subscribing to one of the big three. And the other thing that they observed was that when it comes to the amount of time that people have been subscribing to these various SVOD services, Netflix also dominates. So Netflix, when you look at the number of months that users have been subscribing to these services, Netflix is somewhere right around 40 months or so average duration. Amazon comes next. They're at around 30-ish, give or take, maybe a little bit less, and then it sort of falls off to Hulu. They also noted that there are some examples of niche SVOD services that appear to have established themselves pretty well. So they called out Crunchyroll, that now has more than a million global subscribers. They also called out WWE Network, that now has almost 2 million subscribers. So, you know, clearly there is a market for some of these niche services, but at the same time, it's the market is dominated by the top three. And we also see more and more folks going over to the connected TV world.
You do indeed. And, you know, all of this, we're in one of those situations where I think where one thing reinforces the other. Mm-hmm. And clearly what this data is telling us is that connecting the television and getting people watching again on television was a critical step for online video, because that basically paves the way for it to become mainstream in that household. As long as it was not on the television, it was something that wasn't going to get the engagement that television gets. And now for very many people, it's become just television. I tell you, it was remarkable. We were watching one of the Planet Earth things on Netflix, I think, last night. And my wife said to me, "Look at that picture. That is gorgeous." And I had to pinch myself, because we were watching on Netflix probably at about, I don't know, 3.5-4 megabits per second. And she was right. The picture was just gorgeous. And here we are. It's just TV. And I think that's really one of the things that comes across to me so strongly from this data, is that for many people now, it is just television, just part of what we watch.
Yeah, I very much agree with that, Colin. And I, like your wife, I find myself periodically stepping back when watching any online source, whether it's Netflix or anybody else on my big screen TV, and truly marveling at how great the quality is. And then you get into the stopping and the pausing and the rewinding and the fast forwarding, and it's so responsive. And then you kind of stop and say, well, God, where was this capability even 5 years ago or 10 years ago? And it was absolutely nowhere. And just the progress that we've made, that the market has made, is so quick, so dramatic and so quick. It really is pretty startling. And I think, just to kind of bring it forward, it shows up in the data that we're talking about here. People are noticing this. It is just becoming TV for them. And it's creating this concept that, you know, FreeWheel likes to call the new living room, where it's parity access between online and pay TV.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And, it's so clear, particularly when you look at the data that Roku just put out. And, of course, they talked about active users, and Roku active users is now 15 million. That's up from 13 million in January, and 10 million, just over 10 million, I think it was, June 2016, just over a year ago. So great growth there for the company. Oh, I should note, this is not the same as devices sold. This is the number of devices that are being used actively each month. That's an important difference there that people should keep in mind. But what they also talked about was the number of hours of streaming content that they provide to those devices. And again, now a big increase, you kind of expect that since they've had a big increase in active users. It went from 4 billion hours in the first half of 2016 to 7 billion hours in the first half of 2017. So that sounds impressive, but again, you'd expect that because of the growth in the active users. So I divided it out and figured out what that worked out to per person. So in the first half of 2016, the average user streamed 2 hours and 26 minutes per day. And that has grown to 2 hours and 44 minutes per day. So that's about, I think that's about a 12% increase. And there it is right there in the data world. This is one of the most popular devices. Actually, ComScore says it's the most popular streaming media device that people are using. And they are using it just like TV. The average person, of course, is watching about 4 hours of television a day. And the TV's on for about 8 hours a day, I think, still in the average home. And now Roku in those homes that have a Roku is a substantial portion of viewing. So I think this is a testament to just how fast things are growing. And you know, I have to say this is Roku reported numbers that we're talking about here, so that not independent, but they seem to be fairly consistent in the way they report these numbers. I guess I tend to believe what they're telling us.
Yeah, and one thing also interesting about Roku, we've had Scott Rosenberg, their SVP of advertising, participate in a number of our conferences, and the point that he repeatedly makes is that the fastest growing category of content that's consumed on Roku devices is ad supported. So we, you know, we've talked a lot about Netflix and Amazon and so forth in this podcast, and we typically do, but important to note that Roku itself is saying that it's actually the ad supported services. So there we're talking primarily about like full episode players from the broadcast and cable networks, that those are the primary drivers now of Roku video consumption.
Yeah, and that in itself speaks to this real reinvention of what it means to watch television, because the people are choosing to use apps from the broadcasters and the cable TV providers directly, rather than watching it through the cable set-top box in a live or DVR environment. And I think that's a pretty remarkable testament to the way we are thinking about entertainment and the fact that it is changing. Obviously, what's happening here is that people that have a deep relationship with a particular channel is now choosing to consume that channel in the channel's own app on Roku. And I guess a great example is HBO Go, for example, where people are jumping in and using that in preference to what they're getting through their pay TV set-top box. I wonder, do you find yourself doing that, Will? You have Comcast, which is X1, which is the best interface, I think, widely regarded as the best interface in pay TV in the US at the moment. Do you use the HBO Go app, or do you tend to still watch HBO through X1?
Yeah, I'm definitely in the latter camp, Colin. I mean, accessing HBO content via X1 is a snap, just as it is accessing any other content through X1. So I think your point in a general sense is a good one, but I think more specifically, at least, you know, for this X1 user, it's not really, I'm still there with the set top as opposed to needing Roku. I use Roku and Apple TV, Chromecast. I mean, I have all of them just like you do. I use them for lots of other reasons. But, you know, when it comes to just wanting to watch something on demand that's available on cable, X1 is a great resource. You know, the other dimension I think here, Colin, is that the pay TV operators for many, many years, of course, have made a big business out of the deployment of set-top boxes to second, third, fourth rooms in people's homes. And those, you know, cost sometimes $5 a month, $10 a month, you know, whatever it is. And I think what we're seeing is that these connected TVs that now provide full access to the, you know, on-demand libraries from these individual networks, authenticated, easily accessible, all available right there on the big screen TV in second, third bedroom type of things. You know, it's a very compelling value proposition. You buy it one time and you get full access to your TV lineup.
You do, yeah. But I don't know, in our house, we use the Roku, I think, probably almost all the time, I would say, as our primary device for viewing. And one of the things I've been impressed with that many of the platforms are doing is providing unified search. And that, to me, is almost a replacement. It makes that device much more of a replacement for a paid television set-top box. If you're using those TV Everywhere apps and they're included in that cross-device search, I think you've got a pretty good interface, particularly when you couple it with pretty robust voice search. You can search for shows specifically with voice. So you know, it seems to be certainly all coming together, I think, on these streaming media players that are creating a very almost pay TV replacement service. But it definitely sounds to me like the X1 interface is delivering a pretty similar experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly now that they include Netflix as well, it only gets stronger. But, you know, we wanted to recap some of the interesting data underlying some of the core trends in the market on this podcast. One of the nice things I know you agree with is that there's such great data available now. There's so many different sources, and it's possible to sort of track how the market's developing, that, you know, that's something you and I do separately. And it's nice to come together on the podcast and review some of this. So we're going to keep doing that, right, on subsequent podcasts.
Oh, absolutely. As our listeners know, I love the data. you can see, you see the market evolving before your very eyes if you keep careful tabs on it. And we should continue to ask people that have the data to come on the podcast and talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that's it for what we have time for this week, Colin. So certainly to be continued on the data front, right?
You bet.
Okay, well, thanks, Colin, and thanks everybody for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast. And we'll see you all again next week.